Welcome to the news for October on the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and coming up this bulletin, Top Shelf declares pathway to profitability. Kate Byron campaigns for tax relief with excise strength gin. Business booming at McLaren Vale Winery, Oliver's Taranga. And new lease on life for Orange, New South Wales cider maker, Small Acres. ASX-listed distiller Top Shelf International has declared it is on a pathway to becoming profitable by the first half of FY25. At its full-year results presentation in early September, CEO Trent Fraser said the company had enacted significant change right across the business, including leadership and board refresh, labour force reductions, and a procurement overhaul.
We're sitting here in the Como office, which we're actually shutting next week as well, to give you an idea. This urgent action has been critical to getting some balance sheet repair in order. It's been quite a big pivot to be more margin focused. And to give an example of that, we've made some big calls to eliminate some SKUs that were generating big revenue but very limited margin. So net-net, the EBITDA line will continue to improve, and that's our new barometer. The flip side is focusing on those areas that are really driving the business. As noted, some massive national distribution wins, the biggest retailers in the country. As part of the strategic review, we've also identified a number of assets that either may not be core serving or we just simply don't need at this juncture. This could be expensive equipment, barrels, museums, and of course, most notably, some interest around the canning and bottling division of our business. There is a process being run here, so more updates to come around this.
Fraser said a packaging tender had delivered savings of $1.50 per bottle for Grain Shaker vodka, with further margin gains flowing from the ongoing premiumisation of the Ned whisky brand. Meanwhile, the company has been interviewing prospective distribution partners for its brand portfolio, which is soon to include Act of Treason, Australian agave spirit.
We always recognise at some point at the, you know, in the company's history or growth and evolution, it would need the support of a partner, you know, that has a large sales force and global footprint, you know, to accelerate us into the future. And those discussions are going well. We've been engaging with a number of possible prospects and quite openly, three of which have already visited the properties and asset base, you know, down to the distillery, the barrel house, and obviously up to the agave farm.
That was Top Shelf CEO Trent Fraser, who I spoke with in depth about the Australian agave project back in season 14 of the podcast. Kate Byron Distillery has released a new on-premise exclusive gin available only in bulk format. Brookie's Excise Strength Gin is packaged in a 15-litre jug-in-a-box that aims to reduce environmental impact as well as packaging costs. These savings, together with more modest alcohol strength of 38%, have enabled the distiller to offer a premium Australian gin at a more competitive price point. And as the name suggests, it comes with a political message. Founder Eddie Brooke says Excise Strength Gin aims to raise awareness about Australia's out-of-control spirits tax, which surpassed $100 per litre of pure alcohol on August 1, 2023.
When we first started in 2016, we paid around $23 in excise per bottle. At this latest excise increases was on the 1st of August, and that increases two times a year. Our cost of excise is now $32.50. We as a small business, you just simply can't pass all of those costs on, really, because to the bars, to the industry, the bottle shops, and also the end consumers, their cost is just too extreme. And I suppose as small producers, we don't have the economy of scale growing quick enough to absorb those ongoing costs. So as a result, that really does have an effect of reducing margin in the business. And the challenging impact that our industry is facing at the moment is we're seeing increases in costs across the board, you know, from freight, from packaging cost increases as a result of inflation, extreme increases from excise system, and we're also seeing how the economic, you know, conditions are impacting consumer demand and spend choices. So we're really seeing some challenging times for the industry. And you know, the goal here is the excise reform has been on the table of conversation for some time. And it's something for our industry that is, as this excise increase continues every 6 months, it's getting to this point that is putting such stress on the industry and to the point where we're actually seeing a number of distilleries in Australia, unfortunately, collapsing due to those reduced margins and the cost of excise.
Eddie Brooks says Brookie's Byron Dry Gin will always be the company's flagship gin. But with a complicated recipe comprising 25 different botanicals and a higher excise component at 46% alcohol, it is a difficult proposition for use in bars and restaurants.
In Australia, you know, in particular in the on-premise, you know, there is such a demand for premium gin, but it's also got to be at a price point that meets the demand for the market. And for us, it's not a value product, it's not a low-quality product, but we wanted to essentially craft a gin that fit that market really well. It's a new recipe, really leaning towards more traditional botanicals. In there, you've got your classic balance of juniper, coriander, angelica, and we've actually brought to the forefront pink grapefruit, which has been a great addition. And that pink grapefruit just gives this awesome sort of citrus pop and backbone to it. But if you were to kind of classify it, you'd be looking at it more like a modern Australian dry gin.
How did you develop this fairly innovative packaging?
We worked with Visy as our partner to come up with a new delivery system. It's essentially a premium jug in a box.
Is it proprietary?
It's not proprietary, but it hasn't been used for application in our industry.
It's something similar has been used by another industry.
Exactly. Used in our oil industry, but something that we're going to make open and available to the rest of the industry too. You know, if we can be a part of more bulk spirits getting delivered to bars and reducing that cost of supply chain, but also the weight going into recycling, but also to landfill, I think, you know, that's a really great step forward for the industry. We supply unique bottles that can be refilled. And when we worked out it's around about 300 bottles per customer, we're going to be saving going through the supply chain each year. Now, you think that on a system that's scaled, and imagine to the point where the majority of first pour rails in Australia are utilizing bulk pour spirit, how much waste that's going to take out of our supply chain. And that's a pretty exciting thing.
And how do you plan to get this excise strength gin in front of the parliamentarians?
Well, I've heard politicians don't mind a drop or a drink themselves. For us, it's about creating momentum. We have such a great industry body in the Australian Distillers Association that works with Spirits and Cocktails Australia and in terms of lobbying and getting that message out there. But to all distilleries, our job is to get that message to our local MPs and show how big of an impact or what an opportunity for change this can be. You know, when we first started, we were one of 120 distilleries in Australia. There's now 500 plus distilleries, which is, you know, incredible. I actually can't keep up with how many there are now. But we need that government support in order to continue driving and kind of realise the potential for the industry.
That was Eddie Brook from Cape Byron Distillery. McLaren Vale Winery Olivers Taranga recently announced the launch of Ihana Wine, a collaboration with Finnish Formula One driver Valtteri Bottas. It's another exciting initiative for the company founded in 1994 by sixth-generation grape grower Karina Wright. She says Olivers Taranga has been growing in spite of the difficult economic conditions currently confronting the wine industry.
We've got quite a strong direct-to-consumer club, our OTT club, and it's been growing quite well. Also, we did a recent expansion of our cellar door, which has meant that we can have a few more people in the place, but that our experience in cellar door is still very, you know, it's one of real connection, I suppose. And the cellar door team have been winning lots of awards for their, you know, wine communicator of the year and all of these sorts of things. We've also been really limited, probably more than anything, especially by the volume of Fiano and Grenache particularly. So we have been pulling bits of Grenache out of contracts and planting more Fiano and things like that. So that sort of is starting to ease eventually. So we just sort of see some pretty strong growth on the horizon, especially a national distributor is Red and White, and we've really been limiting them more than we've been able to supply. So, however, you are very right. There is, you know, a fair bit of doom and gloom out there at the moment in the industry with the loss of China. There's a bit of Cabernet and Shiraz in particular flowing around that doesn't have a home in general in the region. And
even premium stuff?
I don't think premium stuff as much. I think it kind of falls down a slide, I suppose, doesn't it? But, yeah, there wasn't as much contracted by the bigger guys last year. I don't know. We'll see how that all pans out. But it's definitely a tough market. There's not a hell of a lot of growth happening, in particular being able to replace such what was such a huge volume that was going to China. We were playing in that space, but only in a very small amount, so hasn't impacted us as much.
And you've mentioned Fiano a couple of times. Is that a rising star for Oliver's Taranga?
Yes. Yep. Massive.
What do you think is so appealing about it?
I think the food friendliness of it. It's as a winemaker, it's amazing for me because in McLaren Vale, if I planted Chardonnays or Sauvignon Blanc, you know, the acid naturally sort of drops out, and you end up sort of making a bit of a commercial style wine. Fiano has high natural acidity, as much so that I've actually been making a traditional method sparkling with it as well. Super small batch, tiny, working with Kate Laurie up at Deviation Road Wines, which has been amazing. But it's got plenty of texture. It's, you know, super delicious, works really well with our food, being a coastal region here in McLaren Vale. So the restaurateurs really love it because I suppose it just doesn't fight with the food, you know, flavours-wise so much. The texture element of it and the lovely, you know, beautiful natural acidity. Yeah, don't know. It's pretty exciting.
Wright said the company's growth trajectory was behind its June acquisition of the Gemtree Winery in McLaren Vale in partnership with Adelaide Hills company Mike Press Wines. The contract processing facility will now be known as Oliver and Press.
We have been contract processing out at Gemtree for quite a while and, you know, getting to the point where we're growing quite a bit, and the risk, I suppose, of losing a contract processing facility, especially one that can focus on premium production. You know, we don't really have a lower end wine. So, you know, a lot of the other contract processing facilities in the region or, you know, surrounds are, you know, a bit more commercial wine sort of focused. Mike Press Wines had also been doing all of their processing there. We also really love the team. The team led by Josh as the winemaker manager were some of the most brilliant cellar hands and team that I've sort of been involved with over my winemaking career. So it was very exciting to band together and be able to buy the whole site. And then we've also kept all the team with us as well. So pretty exciting. But, you know, it's a 2,500-tonne winery, and we only at the moment do about 300 tonnes, and Mike Press does about the same. So we'll still be running it as a contract processing facility moving forward.
Karina Wright from Oliver's Taranga there. And you'll be able to hear the rest of our conversation in an upcoming episode on Ihana Wine. Small Acres Cider in Orange, central western New South Wales, is celebrating a raft of accolades for its products on the awards circuit this year. The gongs included Champion Cider at the Sydney Royal Beer and Cider Awards for its Pink Lady Apple Cider and a gold medal for its 2021 Sparkling Perry at the Japan Cider Cup. The awards build on the company's impressive competition pedigree under former owners James and Gail Kendall, who sold Small Acres to Nick and Janine Gagan in 2020.
It was a bit over 3 years ago. The Kendalls were going back to the UK, so you know, Gail's from Bristol and they're moving back, and we heard about it and we were cider lovers. Yeah, it was kind of a moment of COVID madness, really, where we had, you know, all this time on our hands, and we had been looking for, you know, some local business that we could get involved with. And in fact, I'd been making a little bit of cider, and we were just, you know, rabid lovers of the Small Acres cider. And we kind of went, well, if we don't do this, we won't have any cider. So, yeah, that was pretty much the thought process. You know, we've just sort of been building things up from when we started, where, you know, we didn't have much cider at all left from the Kendalls up until now, where we've got, you know, a big range. And luckily we've been back in the awards again, and that's very exciting for us, obviously.
Nick Gagan said it had been a steep learning curve for him and Janine, not least in the orchard.
Up until then, I'd really only ever killed houseplants. And next thing, we're a custodian of, you know, 600 cider apple trees. That was definitely something very new for me. And we were coming out of drought, so the trees were, you know, had definitely better days. But we've sort of been steadily building the orchard back up. And with this year, we're just about to plant another 300 cider apple trees. So we're going to sort of expand our capacity in 5 years when apples come in. But it's fun. There's nothing better than bumping along on the tractor around the orchard at, 6 o'clock at night on a summer's night. And, it's just warm and beautiful. So, yeah, it's been fun. And then, everything else with it, the cellar door, which is kind of it's a tourism experience as well as anything else. And so you've got to sort of gear yourselves up for that as well as any of the sort of marketing.
And when you talk about expanding the orchards and, presumably growing your volumes, like where do you sell the cider currently and how will you sort of grow your distribution?
Yeah, so at the moment, we really sell mostly in the Central West. So we have a lot of bottle shops, restaurants and cafes, as well as obviously our own cellar door. Orange, Bathurst, Dubbo, Canowdra, sort of all the regional spots. And then we do mostly, really anything in Sydney is pretty much direct. We have a good Sydney clientele that come up and visit the cellar door and then they'll order for stuff and we just ship it down. We've got a few nice restaurants in Sydney that take our stuff, the Sixpenny and Barara Waters Inn, probably the best known of them. But then, we sort of ship everything else down. We've had a couple of bottle shops, but they tend to be a bit sporadic and we're pretty happy to stay on the other side of the mountains most of the time.
The sparkling Perry that David sent me, which I was really impressed with, was that a new product?
Yeah, no, the Kendalls had done the Perry for quite some time. Obviously, there's a lot to it. We're really happy with where we are. The whole champagne method thing, there's a lot of late nights in the shed with riddling and disgorging and, it's still a very hands-on process. So we're not big enough really for the equipment to do things in an automated way. We have about a dozen Perry pear trees in the orchard, and they're finicky little heifers. So it really depends on the year how much fruit we get off them. But most of the cider in that, in the Perry, are just colony pears. So they're your Buribos and your common varieties. But this year we had quite a good harvest of Green Horse Perry pears, and we got some more from one of the local growers. The juice of just the Perry pears, it's fantastic, and it's got so much complexity. Also tends to be full of tannin. it's sort of, it's quite harsh in that sense when it's just been pressed. But the dimensional flavors involved are amazing. It's just, if we had a lot more of them, that would be very exciting. But, we're building up, and we've got a few local growers have got Perry pears. And then a mate of mine, Tom, who's up in Armidale, he's a big cider and Perry fan. His parents his family have a fantastic orchard, and he's got some really nice, they're culinary pears, but, they're really, really special ones as well. So we're sort of doing more to work with local producers. And getting back to your question, it's not really the volume. Like, it's more about having a better selection to us in terms of that, the cider making, and just having more options for what we can do. We're just growing and growing every year, not in a ridiculous sense, but in a good sense. And, apples take 3 to 5 years to come to fruit, apple trees. And so we're building for the future, really.
Nick Gagan there from Small Acres Cider. That's it for this edition of The News. Take care, and I'll be back with you again soon.